This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is CoronaCast. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan.
CoronaCast is a daily podcast that's all about answering your questions about coronavirus. But before we get there, Norman, one of the things that we do also do on this podcast is correct ourselves if we've made an error. So if you think we've made an error, listener, let us know.
Yeah.
Norman, what did you want to say?
Well, we have made an error. It's terrible to admit, but we have. We were talking about schools the other day, and I suggested that the conflict here was that places that had been successful in controlling the virus, like Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, etc., had not closed schools, and that was an excuse for people not to close schools. And I was corrected by one of our podcast listeners who correctly ticked me off and told me, as I should have known, that Hong Kong actually has closed schools, and they've been closed schools since the schools have been closed since January, end of January. So it's not true that everywhere that's been successful has not closed schools. I apologise for that. And again, I'll repeat what Tegan just said. If you think we've made an error, just let us know via the usual method, or because it's the same place that you're putting in your questions. Be polite, but we'll get to it. We don't want to make mistakes.
So that's right. You can get to us via abc.net.au/coronavirus, which is also where you can send in those questions. So let's take some of those questions. Let's start with, where did this virus actually come from, Norman? Is it a CIA conspiracy?
Well, CIA conspiracy, I've heard that one. American Army scientists dropped it in Wuhan. I've heard that it's come from outer space. And on the Health Report podcast, which you can get from the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts, I had on a phylogeneticist who's actually studied the genetics of this virus going back in time. And there seems little doubt that this emerged in Wuhan, probably from a bat, round about November. And the relations of this virus have been in bats for quite a long time, going back to the 20th century. And so there's little doubt that this arose in Wuhan, and you can see an evolutionary history that makes sense of it. So why would you invent outer space or very bright American Army surgeons? And why would they release it anyway if they knew it was going to bite them in the bum by coming over the ocean back to America and causing devastation and deaths? So I think that's a fairly definitive answer on that one.
So another one of the questions that we have relates to the statement you were making before about schools. Should I, a parent of two young kids, keep my kids home from school?
That's the key question. Why are you keeping your child home from school? If it's to protect the child, at the moment, at the state of the epidemic, at least in a country like Australia, the risk to the child is low because there's not that much COVID-19 around. In parts of America, the United States, Italy and other places, there are much more around, and it's a different kettle of fish. I do believe that schools should be shut, but that's not necessarily to protect individual children, it's to protect the community at large. Because once this starts infecting children, it will spread, because children spread viruses quite actively, and they will become a source of infection for the rest of the community. So schools do need to be shut. But if your aim is, before the authorities have decided to shut schools, if your aim is to protect your child, you're probably not going to do that terribly well if you just one parent acting. It's a public health measure.
So we're getting questions from people who live in share houses. For example, Hannah, who's saying she lives in a share house with four people. Their housemates have partners, so there's often quite a crowd in the house. With advice from the US and everything looking at making social distancing as much of a thing as possible, what do people in share houses do?
Essentially, what's got to happen is the people you're living with have got to be a bit like your family. And if you're socially isolating yourselves, well, it's very hard in an apartment to maintain that distance. But essentially, as a group of people, you've got to be not mixing with people outside and creating risk within the share house. So if three of you are behaving and one of you's out mixing it and in crowded areas, then that person's a risk to the rest of the group. So if you're all doing it and all being careful, and if one of you gets symptoms isolating yourself in your own bedroom, then that will be much safer. That the risk in a share house is that one or two of you go off and do the wrong thing and you'll be a risk to the others.
So on self-isolation, Lucia is asking about sort of where the lines are with it. Can she walk the dogs? Can she go for a run late at night? Can you go for a drive? Where's the line?
Well, the line's pretty rigid. If you're self-isolating because you've just got off a flight from overseas and you're isolated for 14 days, or you've come in contact with somebody with COVID-19, you are not supposed to leave your room. You go into your room, people bring you food, you have your own utensils, your own towel, and you don't leave. That's what it is, and you do not go out.
And can we talk about if someone's tested positive for COVID-19, there's a contact tracing process. What does that involve? How far back are they looking?
24 or 48 hours, depending on the country and depending on the state. And really, it's who you've come in contact with during that time. They're looking for longer term close contact. If you were, let's say that you were in a lecture theatre and you were in the top seat and they were in the bottom one, they probably, and you didn't speak to them at all, they would probably judge that you're not a realistic contact. But if you're right next to them for an hour long lecture, then you probably would be considered at risk. So they basically they ask the person who you've come in contact with, just think of everybody, don't worry whether it's close contact or not, we'll talk to them. And then they obsessive compulsively contact each person and then make a decision whether it's a significant enough contact that they've got to be isolated. Social distancing and contact tracing is the way to control this epidemic.
So much as we might like to, it's impossible to test every single person who might have COVID-19. So what's science telling us about how we figure out how many cases there probably are out there?
Well, there's a really interesting paper on this in Science Magazine, so one of the leading science journals. And they've modelled a situation in China where people were travelling a lot during the Chinese New Year. So they kind of knew when they could track infections during that time, and they used the previous year's mobility in the Chinese population to model that. And they were able to look at that period and then the period when China brought in really strict rules about internal travel. And then they modelled the observed cases, in other words, the documented cases, so in other words, people who were documented with a positive infection, and the number of infections, and then inferred from that how many of the infections were undocumented, in other words, under the surface, that you didn't know about. And using very complex maths, they came to the conclusion that about 86% of infections that turned out in that population were actually from undocumented infections in people. So in other words, there were people in the community who were infected, and they actually were responsible for more than half of all infections in the community. So you had some documented infections so that you knew people were actually moving, they had the infection, you could track them, you knew how many people they spread it to, but the number of people with infections was much bigger than that, and the question was how much of that was due to people who didn't know they had the infection or it was undocumented. 86%, huge.
That's massive. What does that mean for Australia?
It means that there are lots of people under the radar who have undocumented infections, and they are responsible for most of the infections that emerge rather than people that you know have got it. So we've just been talking about contact tracing, where you know who's got the infection and you do that, and you do that case, that contact tracing. This is where you don't know, and it's a surprise. And that's a significant one. The interesting thing about this was that the contagiousness of the documented infections was what you and I have talked about on the CoronaCast before, two or three people being infected by each person. The contagiousness of undocumented infections was much less, about half. So in other words, they were only infecting one or two people rather than two or three. And that's because they probably had mild disease. They were undocumented because they had such mild disease, they weren't aware they had a problem. So even though they were half as infectious, they still accounted for the majority of ultimate infections. So this knowing exactly how much infection is out there in the community is really important. And if you're only finding out what you know about and people that come forward for testing under the rules, you're going to miss a lot. That's what it means for countries like Australia, the United States and elsewhere.
So for me as an average person, is the takeaway here to just really appreciate that the official number of cases is much lower, and so to just be more vigilant than ever about containing the spread?
Yeah, and the place that we need to get to here is mass testing of anybody under suspicion. A lot of places have rules that you've got to be, you know, you've got to have come out with symptoms and you've been on a plane arrived in the last 14 days, or you've been in contact with somebody with COVID-19 and you come out in symptoms, or you've got a pneumonia and you don't know why you've got a pneumonia, or you're a healthcare worker and you come out with symptoms. Those are the rules to limit the stretched resources on testing. But in reality, what we should be doing is much wider, more intensive testing, particularly if you know there's a cluster in a part of your city. Really, what we should be doing is shutting down that part of the city, doing mass testing, finding out all the contacts, and really trying to get it under control. And then you could relax the rules on that part of the city. Contact tracing is so important. And that's all for today. If you've got a question, go to abc.net.au/coronavirus.
And if you have a friend, you might like to stand 1.5 metres away from them and tell them about this podcast. We also have older episodes that you guys might want to listen to. The questions are in the description text.
I really do hope you've got a friend. I'm sure you do. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
See you then.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.